Welcome to Hummingbird, a conversation about identity, Celtic and Métis, healing and wellness, the spirit of place, and the pull of mystery. We linger in conversation about things at the center of our creative work and life.
We respectfully acknowledge that this podcast is recorded on the treaty and traditional territories of many nations, including the Anishinaabeg, the Mississaugeag Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Wendat peoples.
These lands are now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples, and are covered by Treaty 13 with the Mississaugas of the Credit and the Williams Treaty, treaties to peaceably share and protect this land through friendship and respect. We thank those who have cared for this land, and we are grateful for the opportunity to live here and connect through conversation.
I always love it when the seasons are changing. It's starting to get brighter, longer, it's warming up. And I also love seeing the changes in the behavior of all the wildlife, the birds, the squirrels, everybody that I encounter on my trails.
And I love how you said everybody, because it is, it's our community, right?
Yes, it is. The trees are changing. The ground is still a bit frozen and snow covered at times, but then you have days where it's not. I think that there's just fresh with possibility in the springtime. It's a beautiful time of year. And I've noticed that lately when I'm out and I'm driving different places, I do a lot of driving. I'll see hawks on the highway, a lot of hawks lately. I've started to see some turkey vultures flying, which I don't know where they go in the winter, but I don't typically see them during the winter, but I've started to see them start to fly again. Lots of crows. In my yard, there are robins and blue jays and cardinals and little wee baby woodpeckers, which is not a good sign for my tree because I've heard that the woodpeckers typically prefer to eat trees that are in their last years. So I'm wondering if that's what that means for my tree in my backyard, but who knows? It's got a couple years left in it, but certainly nearly every time I look outside, there's a little woodpecker in there. I'm seeing people sharing about coyotes being out and on the prowl. One day when I was driving, I was going to the US, and just before I got to the Canadian border, I was on the US side. A wolf crossed my path. So that was pretty incredible.
Oh, wow.
You know, the bears are going to be waking up soon and coming out, and not that we have a lot of bears in Southern Ontario, but my mind is always in two places, and I know they're going to start waking up north soon. And
it's ripe for encounters. It's ripe for these experiences, like you described seeing the wolf. And I think, too, there's different ways that these things happen. We can sort of spot something as we're moving through a space, or we can be moving through a space and look up, and there is the animal. To me, that really is an encounter. It's an unexpected meeting. There's that experience of being in the same space with the particular animal, and then something happens in that space. And I know we're going to talk about that today in our session, animal encounters and how we write about that, and different ways too that has served our creative process. And last time I was talking about deer being an important animal to me in life and into my imagination, into my work. And it's not necessarily all Bambi and cuteness. There's a dark side to the deer as well. I'll explore that a little bit, I think, in this poem that I'll share during our episode. And I think too about how something can be a before and after for us too with an encounter, and then hold that before and after as you go through life. And I think about the deer as well. It's been something that I've written about in all my books except one. And then I also think too how as a young girl, I had these toy deer. So I've always been fascinated by deer. And it's interesting too how certain animals just become something more than just an animal, and how they kind of become part of our identity in a strange sort of way and have something often to teach us if we listen. So I think that speaks to you as well, right, Jessica?
Absolutely. And look at us, here we are at the Hummingbird Podcast. And what came first, right? Like, I know the name The Hummingbird Podcast came first for you and I working together. But what's happening over time is that this work is becoming connected to the energy of a hummingbird. When we see hummingbirds, we think of each other, we think of this work together. And then we learn from the hummingbirds around what we need to do next, or how to just follow the sweet nectar of conversation.
Yes, yes, wonderful. I love that. So rich, that imagery, Jessica. Well done. Well, even thinking about the word hummingbird, it has the word humming in it. So there's song, there's celebration of sound, even in the word hummingbird, which I think really speaks to where we move in our Hummingbird Podcast. And it's just so interesting to think about what's often embedded. And it's only sometimes when we take that moment to have an encounter with a word that we see more, because we can become kind of numb to language and to our everyday life. And I think going back to the experience of an encounter, how that can open us up, also bring us closer at the same time. So it's an interesting dimension of time expanding and contracting at the same moment. And much like I think when we experience a poem, it does the same thing. It kind of opens us up and brings us closer to something. And I just think those moments in life are our gifts. And if we can write about them, that can be something else too. But maybe I'll share this poem now and talk a little bit about the background of this poem. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's move into it. I mentioned the importance of deer into my creative journey. And then also I think too, how as we move through life, there's moments where something in the outer world will trigger something in the inner world that we know that we have to write and explore. And I was touring in the UK doing some readings there at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and the Scottish Arts Club and other places in the UK. And at one point during my time there, I wandered into a gift shop and I looked up and I saw this coaster, and it had a picture of three deer on it. And it said, "A leash of deer." And I thought, a leash of deer? I've never heard that expression. And often we have these collective nouns for groups of animals or birds, like a parliament of owls or a murder of crows. And I thought, a leash of deer. So I thankfully was able to buy a coaster and I could fit that in my suitcase. It wasn't something too big to pack successfully and bring it home. And I knew at some point I would write about a leash of deer and have that, I don't know, as a title or as a phrase within my poem. One day I just sat with my notebook and I started to think about, I mean, it goes back to the deer and that connection to the deer having to do with my own father's tragic death and how deer were involved in that way. And I think I'll let the poem kind of unfold that as well. But I was thinking that moment in grief when we have lost someone, when we think, what if this didn't happen? And then what if that didn't happen? Then this wouldn't happen. And the way that the imagination can go there, and how that can't always be healthy, how ruminating over the what if isn't necessarily a good thing. But yet at the same time, I think of what if being a place where art often begins and our engagement with possibility, even if we know it can't be true, but something about the art can make it true. So I'll just read now, A Leash of Deer. Untamable creatures, spotted as trout lily, camouflaged umber, tawny branched with satellite ears, air cup to the heartbeat of the ground. Extended line between sun, dawn, moon, dusk, a leash of deer. Which sight brought forth the first? Allowed leggy form to lift, up and off the forest floor, into white-tailed leaps, or red, or roe. No matter, kill, suffocation, quick throat slit, kill and stop the leash of deer from spreading out. So when that fall night rears, a father driving home, one road away from home, no cloven-hoofed ungulate on stone mill road, parting from a field of parting corn, from stalk and husk and rustle, beside a frog-thick croaking ditch, to trigger panic, the swerve. A father would have made it back to bed, exhaling oaths of alcohol through graying shades of stubble, and a daughter would awaken to the muffle of his morning snores through cedar walls, and not the 3 a.m. knocking at her bedroom door, the waiting cop.
Thank you so much for that. I've read this poem before because you've shared it with me. And today, a couple of things were happening for me as I was listening to you read it. One of the things was the color and the sound of the poem really leaped out to me. There was a lot of just there's like a body in this poem. This poem really brings to life the body of the deer. But in that, it also just brought to life when you see a deer at the side of the road that's been hit, and the grief in that moment and that encounter as tragedy and that fragility and vulnerability of a moment, and that something that happens in a quick second of choice, the impact that that can have, not just on the deer, but also on father in the poem.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Jessica. It's interesting. And I think about the phrase body of deer and how I think about the fact that in my mind and the imagination, I thought, well, what if there were never any deer? Then there would have been no deer on the road that my father would have had to swerve. So that idea too of going back to that first deer, which of course is impossible, but that way too that we can go back to the, and of course, when I mentioned in the poem, no matter, kill, suffocation, quick throat slit, kill and stop the leash of deer from spreading out. There is no way that I would want to do that. But the poem is putting that energy within, in sort of the way of dealing with grief and dealing with the what if and the anger, I guess, so to speak, or those uncomfortable feelings, which I think need to be explored in a poem as well, even if necessary, we won't necessarily say that we would actually act on them. But it allows the imagination to explore that. Of course, it could never happen anyway, because I would never want that to happen to deer, because I love deer too. Some of my most amazing moments in life have been encounters with deer. And so that's the thing that I love, that it can be a vessel for ambiguity and how it can hold these different places depending on where we are on life. And of course, the deer has its own agency as well too. So these are the things that we can imprint on it, but also that's part of, I think, what we do as poets is to explore something to help us see ourselves and to make sense of life. And then also acknowledging that the deer is having its own world and it's in its own space as well too, and just trying to survive. But in this interaction of the deer and the car, how it becomes a tragedy then as well. In this case, the deer is saved, but not the father. Oftentimes, as you say, it's the other way around, or it's both. And it just leads to many tragedies that can happen. But that infringement too of our human world being imposed upon the natural world, and in those intersections that can lead to beautiful encounters where we see something in nature, can also lead to tragedy.
Absolutely. And this is a deep dive, a reflection into relationship. And to bring things back to the hummingbird, while we're sitting here talking, I have behind my laptop, there's a vision board that I had created a couple years ago using collage with a whole bunch of different images and things on it. And sometimes when I'm listening, my eye just catches on to an image and I linger there. And the image my eye caught was actually of a tree. So it's the trunk of a tree and then the branches reaching up into a sunset. But what it looks like to me, and I've never seen it like this before, it's actually the nose of a hummingbird diving toward the earth with the branches of the tree as the body of the hummingbird. And I think about how sometimes if we loop back to what we talked about in terms of that hummingbird energy, that can be, it's about that lifting us up. There's also the work of digging in and going down into things, because we know that hummingbirds wouldn't necessarily go down and into the earth, but they do that within the heart of a flower, for example. And I feel that search, multi-directional movement is just so important when we're exploring anything, right? So when we're exploring animal encounters, there's the magic and the majesty of them and the synchronicity and the spiritual grace of a moment like that. And yet there's also a warning. There's also the fear. There's also the fact that an encounter with an animal could kill us. And it can be dangerous. you know, whether yes. it's on the road or you're on a hike or it's in your own yard, that there's a lot, it's multi-directional. It can be in any way. And so exploring the different directions is really important when we're thinking about anything, because that's where you find the wholeness. And then you decide how you want to, as a writer, use the tools that you have, use the story in order to help create a journey for the reader and an experience and to set the mood.
Yeah. And I think it's so powerful that how your perception saw something that was embedded within based on what was going on with you at that particular moment, and how the mind then is ready to see something that has always been there. That's a really powerful thing. And the sense too of something that's flat and one-dimensional, like poem on a page, is multidimensional if it's working successfully, and how it can move in different spaces, not just in linear time, but horizontally and vertically and up and down and into the underground and into the ether. And I think too about how this poem really started with the concept of a leash of deer and this sense of something being tied to something, and then the one deer creating the next deer and the next deer, so that this just this line and legacy of deer, and they're all connected. And I think about the connections that we all have and how we're connected, just as you said earlier, with all of the returns happening in terms of spring opening up and the bird behavior shifting. I know I've been hearing the song of the red-winged blackbird, and I just love that song. And I think, oh, they're back. That's just wonderful. So these signs too of not only just the weather changing, but the experience of where we are in our own places and how different things return to, and how things can circle around, and different ways too that we can see something if we just sit and pay attention to it.
Right. And what a beautiful moment that can be, because as you're speaking just now, and I'm thinking about that image of a tree that looked like a hummingbird from when you read, and it's all just kind of coming together and connecting for me right now. And I read the line, heartbeat of the ground, air cup to the heartbeat of the ground. And that's really what that image is doing, is that tree is connected to the heartbeat of the ground. The hummingbird is diving in. Deer in your poem is connected to that. And I have a passage to read for you from my new book, Bernice and the Georgian Bay Gold. And let's see if maybe there's a heartbeat somehow of the ground. Maybe it'll be of the water or of the air, right? Like, so
beautiful. You know, yes,
there's the ground, but there's also yep. the air, there's also mm-hmm. the water. And so
yes.
I'm going to read today from my author copy that just came in the mail. So I'm very excited.
Wait, can I just say congratulations, Jessica? It's beautiful to see the book in three dimensions, and wonderful. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. They've done a beautiful job with this book, and I'm just so excited about it. This is about past the midway point in the book. Mamère and Mum have gone away. And so Bernice, the young girl in the book, is sitting on an island and thinking about some of the things her Mamère has taught her, and missing Mamère. One afternoon, I go to the spot on our island where Mamère talks to Pepère. Sitting on the granite with Mamère's rock against my back, I watch waves splash onto the shore. My hair scatters in all directions in the wind. We haven't heard anything from Toronto. Dad says no news is good news. Pepère, are you out there? I shout into the bay. We need help. Please bring Mamère back to us. I pull some tobacco from my pocket, stand up, and walk to the edge. I throw tobacco to the water the way Mamère does to offer thanks, using my left hand because it's closest to my heart. The wind catches it and blows it all back to me. Uh-oh, this isn't a good sign. Sorry, can you still help anyway? I ask the bay. Please and thank you, I love you. Each evening before dark, I visit the painting in the boathouse. I moved it to a spot up in the rafters so I can look at it more closely. Everyone's so busy with Mum and Mamère gone that they haven't noticed the paintings moved. I stare at the painting for hours, imagining Mamère is there hiding behind one of the trees. If I look at it long enough, she'll pop her head out, smile, and say, "Who's there? What did I miss?" "We miss you, Mamère," I say into the wind. A crow lands on a rock by me and caws. "Hello, crow," I twist around. Crow continues to caw and waddles closer to me. It tilts its head. "Is that you?" I ask. "Caw," says crow. "Where have you been all this time, crow?" I step closer. Caw, caw! You're so big! It's me, Bee! Crow stretches out its wings and flies closer. Me the bean, she says. Oh my, it is you, I exclaim. I haven't seen Crow in years. That's her name, Crow. When Crow was a baby, her wing was hurt. Dad helped me feed her small pieces of scone soaked in water. We cared for her until she healed and was strong enough to fly. She followed me everywhere for an entire summer until she flew away one day when I was at school. When I was a baby, my brothers thought I looked like a bean. They started calling me Bee the Bean. They said it over and over for years. Even Crow learned my name. But it feels like a baby name, and I'm growing up. So now I tell my brothers they can call me Bernice or Bee, but not Bee the Bean. Crow can call me Bee the Bean. Crow has permission. Caw, caw, caw! Crow goes back to rock again. Have you been to Toronto, I ask? It's worth a try. She has wings, after all. Caw! Does caw mean yes or no? Bee the Bean, I laugh. That isn't any clearer. Reaching into my dress pocket, I pull out a small piece of bannock. I hold it for Crow. She nibbles at the pieces on my hand. I'm worried about my mare. If any of your friends are in Toronto, ask them to check on her, I plead. As I head back to the lighthouse a while later, Crow follows me.
Beautiful, Jessica. Thank you so much for this reading. And I feel it's extra special with the book in your hand and the reality of holding it as you read it.
Literally, the first words I read out of the book, I haven't had time to open it yet. So it really did feel very special.
Yeah, that is really special. And so much in this passage. And I can't help but think, too, about this sense of liminal spaces with the speaker on the rock and then the water and then the sense, too, of missing the mare and then the throwing into the water and the wind returning it and then the crow appearing and the conversation there and Bernice being at that age too where she's on the cusp of coming out of childhood. And so there's a real heightened quality that's embedded within the piece, even that sense of her not wanting to be the bean anymore, and but yet within that bean she's a seed, she's a seedling, she's growing out of being a bean, and then this crow is returning at this time and how it is communicating with her, and how in that moment too, there's that sense of, well, does the crow know more? And what can the crow tell me about my concerns that she has, meaning her as in my, not me, as if I'm Bernice. And then thinking about the way art and just as always happens, Jessica, when we start talking, the synchronicities and connections, when I think about the tree that's talked about here and the art and then seeing something and then the heart and how things just sort of talk to one another when we have pieces in close proximity and how that can just add so much to so many things and the connections that are always there.
Well, thank you so much for that. I haven't had many opportunities to share or to read from this book. And I really wanted to create this scene to be a counterpart to the previous scene I read where Mamère teaches her how to find connection with the water while standing on the rock, right? With the wind mm-hmm. and with her ancestors. And so as she's missing her Mamère and wants to connect again, she takes what she's learned and she goes and she searches for that connection. And she ends up getting a connection, but it's not what she expected. It's the return of a connection she's had before with this visiting crow. And actually my grandfather on my dad's side of the family, he had a crow that he used to feed scone to and water, who would talk to him and would follow him around. So both of my parents grew up in the same area, but it's my mom's side that's Métis, so it's my non-Métis side. So I really feel too that when I read this piece, a little other layer of energy that comes in is just thinking about my own grandpa, imagining him out on the islands, moving through doing his chores or whatever he was doing while he was talking to a crow, and just the loveliness in having those kind relationships, because it was really, that's what it was. It was simple. There was kindness and memorable, right? And I think that those encounters can be like that. Can be when we encounter in the wild, there can be a connection there. where you feel like that animal is there just for you. And we can't see inside the minds of animals, but that's the feeling that you have. You know, when even when a butterfly comes at a particular moment, you think, oh my gosh, are you here right now just for me? Did you know that I needed you right now? Or the moment in the summer when I was sitting out on that porch and the hummingbird came and I managed to take a picture as I was thinking of you, the right time, which is so hard to get a picture with a cell phone of a hummingbird.
Yes.
What was that? Is that just coincidence? And I don't think it is. I think that when we lean into connecting to the energies that are around us and to recognize the true deep meaning of all our relations and how we're all connected, the wind, the land, the water, the crow, the deer, humanity, the tree, the hummingbird, that we're all a part of life. And because we are all a part of life, we are all connected. And it's almost like, think about the senses. I don't know if I would call it a sixth sense, or is it like the eighth sense? I don't know. I don't know what number I would give it.
How about the hummingbird sense?
The hummingbird sense. There it is. Yeah. Just recognizing that we're all together. And I wanted B in the book to have that moment so that we could see her beginning to understand, because it's not always easy for children to understand. And yet it is easy for them to understand. It's both things, right? That interconnectedness of everything. I think that because children are so much more open than adults, it's easier for them to get there at times in terms of seeing that, oh yeah, no, this crow is here for me. But it's also easy to make mistakes at any age, really, but it's easy to make mistakes too along the way. That there's a learning and a wisdom that comes through understanding how to appreciate an encounter and what my job is in that. I often share the quote by Robin Wall Kimmerer about reciprocity, and that paying attention is a form of reciprocity with the living world, receiving the gifts with open eyes and open heart. And that's from Braiding Sweetgrass. And I feel that in the animal encounters that we've discussed through the last couple episodes, that's really what it's about. It's about paying attention to what we're seeing, what we're feeling, what we're sensing, and then looking at what are those gifts. And the gifts can come to us sometimes, and unfortunately they can look like tragedy, and in the moment we don't recognize them as that gift.
Yeah,
because we've got to really unpack what does the word gift mean, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other show perhaps.
Well, it makes me think too about the word that you used earlier about things being multidimensional, and that even the way, and paying attention in sort of even a way that you were paying attention to the poem and A Leash of Deer in particular, when we were talking about that, and how in paying attention to that, that opened up a portal for you in what was on your vision board to see something that came out through that. So it's interesting when I think about the word leash, it's almost like, I mean, leash can be, you can think of it being like a thing of control, but I'm seeing it more as a thing of connection, like one thing connected to another. And so that sense too of you absorbed in one piece of art then allows you to see something emerge from another piece of art. So there's like a boomerang effect that's going on. And just often too, as we explore what we're talking about in our sessions, how when we often have sessions where we're both sharing something, how we see they're talking to each other as well too, and then the different ways that reverberates. So it's like an energy, I think, can be released. And it's not just in the moment, but it actually continues, and how that can then add to other things that can happen in our day. And that's why I think it's so great for any day that you can to just open up a book of poetry or prose and read a passage aloud and just let that enter into you, and then see what else it might bring and what you've summoned in your way that you've engaged with your imagination with some words on a page and brought them into the air and released them in some way, and how that might work through things that you wouldn't have known otherwise.
Beautiful. Well, I think that's a wonderful way for us to hit pause on the conversation and to continue again next time.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Jessica. Bye, everyone.
Catherine Graham is an award-winning writer and creative writing teacher living in Toronto. Jessica Outram is a Métis writer and educator, Coburg's fourth poet laureate, and assistant principal of Indigenous education. The music has been generously provided by Shannon Linton. Connect with us online at thehummingbirdpodcast.com.